if I'm a salesperson and I want to get, or I'm a business owner trying to sell or whatever, like what's, like if you could give one thing, what would that be?
One, you have to genuinely love yourself.
Okay.
And two, you have to genuinely love your product. And what, and the reason why it has to be both is the first one is that precursor of self-care.
Yeah.
Because the most effective high performance people know how to stay centered. They know how to stay cool and collected. And that has to do with how they're balanced and safe with themselves in all aspects of their life. And so when I can show up for me and be happy and safe and centered, then I can bring my best when it comes to me talking to other people.
Yeah.
And if I can bring my best self through something I love and am passionate about, that's a salesperson.
Yeah, that's amazing. All right, Dustin, we're ready to go, man. Thanks for being here with me.
Yes, my pleasure.
Yeah, you were just about to tell, you're about to dive in a little bit of who you are. But before we get to that though, let's, I want to dive in real quick to something that we're both passionate about, which is like that CRO kind of world, sales world. What's your favorite way for when you go into a new business or when you're consulting with a new business, what's your like go-to lead generation activity? I mean, I know it depends, but do you have like one that if everybody could do, they should do?
Yeah. I mean, there's always going to be the asterisk of the nuance of it depends on industry and how you're, you know, who you're targeting. But yeah, for me right now, kind of last 6 months, it's still phone calls.
Still cold calling, huh?
Yeah. Not necessarily cold.
Cold call. Yeah. But like
calling to speak. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
That's the talk great. Track. Like getting someone on a phone call.
That's right.
Like calling
them. Through the human experience.
Dude. And why do you think so many people on LinkedIn will say, you know, cold calling is dead? And cold calling isn't the right term because cold calls don't really work unless you, I mean, and then it's not a cold call, right? But it's got to be like super personalized. Mm-hmm. You have to have a really good reason for calling. And essentially it's like an ad, it's like a Facebook ad, like,
right.
Like, hey, we know you do this, we're calling because of, you know, whatever the calling is, but why do you think people think phones are dying? Like, or like, what would you say against that?
I think it just depends on how they're paying for the activity. And to, again, coming back to your value prop. So if I'm the business owner answering that question, it comes back to the ROI of my spend to get traction into closed one. I think one of the interesting parts of what I'm saying about the phone call still being the most valuable in the clients that I work primarily with SaaS companies.
Yeah.
Is that's with the caveat that we have the data and the analytics in place that goes, okay, they're not cold. Mm-hmm. We know that where they're at from a scoring perspective that we're relevant and that our phone call is, I wouldn't say necessarily requisite, but it's something that's going to lead to.
Yeah, it's not out of the blue. Like
it's going to be continued momentum. Right. Not I'm trying to start momentum or invoke momentum with somebody.
Right.
So yes, I think the digital tool set definitely has its place in the nurturing perspective. But if we're talking about truly converting to being active in the sales pipe, for me, that human to human phone call experience of I'm trying to convey value, I'm trying to invite you to accept value so we can move forward together. Man, I'd love that to be with human voices.
Yeah. I love phone calls. I mean, that's what my company does. We'll do a cold email campaign to this list.
Yep.
And then we'll follow those up with cold calls.
Absolutely.
So like we're relevant. They've probably seen us. They might've even opened it, read it, and then, you know, got busy and forgot. So I that's kind of how I like to marry the two. And that's our lead gen process to plug into any business, which is, but here's what I love about it. It's super scalable and like repeatable,
right?
Like I can always get new lists. We can always go back and target those old lists. We can, you know, once we get people open it and they opt in or out or whatever, we can take those opt-in lists. We can put them into Facebook. We can run targeted ads specifically to their profiles now.
Yep.
There's just so much you can do when you have like, when you get that first part in, especially for like B2B.
That's right. So real-time use case. So I've been on site with a software company that serves dental practices.
Right on.
We have a few of those here locally.
Yeah.
And what we've been testing was, okay, in the nurturing from a digital perspective, you know, they continue to get their scores up based off of engagement.
Yeah.
But we started attempting on Fridays because typically dental practices are quiet on Fridays, meaning the decision makers are more available because they're not with patients as much.
Yeah.
Okay. If we ran a campaign, an email campaign on Friday morning, there was a really strong kind of shock and awe title about practice ownership. And then as soon as we had opens, they converted to the call list for the SDRs.
Ooh.
But we wouldn't send them that shock and awe unless we knew we had at least three touch points already that they knew the name of the business. Meaning we're not going to waste SDR's time with having to answer the, with who? They already know when I say the name of the company, they have a frame of reference. And now they have some shock and awe value statement that they've opened up in the last 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And now I'm going to add the personal approach on top. That new strategy, we're 3 weeks into it, is slaying.
Yeah. What? So when you say three touch points already, are you talking about ads on Facebook? Are you talking about?
Yeah. Three engagement points where the brand is present and the value prop has been presented.
Okay. So,
so they know the realm of, this company name equals this value or service that we know that the prospect has seen that at least three times.
Okay. Through what channels?
Primarily through web ads and through emails.
Okay. So like programmatic and maybe you've sent them a couple cold emails.
That's
already.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they've been opened, not just delivered.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
again, so we know the eyes on the prize has occurred.
This is the hardest part about sales is like answering the phone, right? Like you've got to marry emails and call. Yeah. Okay. I like that strategy though, but it does crush it.
So, but to your point, there's no silver bullet ever.
No.
As I get the privilege of jumping in and out of industries, which is a ton of fun, it also is really difficult because it's not like I can just be like, over the last 12 clients that I've had, I've been refining the silver bullet and through my consultancy, I bring the silver bullet. It's not that. But the ability to look, to measure, to test, and then to deploy, those things can be very programmatic.
Yeah. I like that a lot. And I mean, that outreach, that kind of outbound cadence for businesses has got to be huge.
Right.
Like, I think that's what so many people miss. And it's because of this age of, I don't know, man, I've read all the books too, right? I've read all the Russell Brunson books. I've read all the Alex Hormozy stuff, right? You got all of these guys who are like, we're going to kill it on Facebook ads or whatever. And I'm just like, why don't you pick up the damn phone?
Right. Well, and I think,
you can do both, but I'm just saying like
1,000%. Well, and I think about, attention arbitrage as we sit going into 2024.
Yeah.
How many digital tools are trying to take up our attention?
Yeah.
Both personally and professionally. And so I think that breakthrough opportunity with the phone call starts to look more like white glove and someone catering to me as opposed to I get all these ads, I get all this stuff, and it's the burden's on me as the consumer or prosumer trying to buy something to sift through it. It used to be the value prop, right?
Right.
15 years ago, we were, oh great, the website is now our sales tool. Yeah. Like people can just choose and they're going to buy. Well, now there's way too many options to even understand what's the difference of the 160,000 offerings that are out there.
Yeah. And what's interesting about that is too, is like a really good phone call, outbound phone call, whatever you want to call it, has to be like super relevant and you've got to understand them. So it's not really a cold call anymore. Cause if I know who I need to talk to, I know who I need to, what problems they're generally facing. Right. Because one of my favorite quotes is everyone's special and you're unique and special just like everybody else.
That's right. Yeah,
exactly. We all got the same problems, right? So you can tap into that. And now it's not really, it's kind of, I like that. It's like a white glove. Like, hey, I'm calling you because I'm sure that you're dealing with this, right?
That's right.
And you know who we are. And
yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. Okay. So how did you get into fractional CRO work? How did you start? Like, when did you figure out that consultancy was your path?
Yeah. So, comes back to kind of core family, right? So I grew up with a dad who was an entrepreneur.
Okay.
He started his career in land acquisition for the city of Anaheim, right? So he's a government employee and his whole job was as federal funds buy land and have big tax improvement type projects, whether it's multifamily units, whether it's building a Walmart and getting a tax credit, someone has to go and negotiate buying the land from private owners to getting it controlled by the city or local municipality. And so he spent many years as a land acquisition consultant.
Yeah.
And how to work with these entities. And he started speaking a lot. And so we were living in LA, is where my family's all from. And in the mid 80s, he was speaking at a conference in DC. And one of the local reps here from Provo, Utah County area approached him after a keynote and said, "We just got this huge grant from the feds to develop all the apple orchards, but we have to follow all this red tape. Could you consult? Would you be interested in even like full-time job to come run the whole fund and help us execute over the next kind of 5 to 10 years? So our family moved from LA to Orem, Utah, so my dad could take this new opportunity. And within a couple of years, he had so many other agencies asking for his help because of the expertise that he left the day job and started his consultancy of helping all of the government agencies, typically city and county level, with having a way to be able to buy land from private use for whatever their funds and grants were.
Wow. And
so I grew up in the ecosystem of, dad's an entrepreneur. He's got this client today. He's up there tomorrow, but he's always around for the things that matter most. Right. So from a, you know, I wasn't ever really in the details of whether it was home run years on revenue. And I never really perceived the income. We were always comfortable, which was a huge blessing, but all I cared about was school performances, music performances, band, sports.
Yeah.
It's always there. He was always around. And so that owning his time to come and go was just the thesis of how that was my reality.
Yeah.
And so kind of from an early age, I've always wanted to own my path and do something that was, allow me to own my time, because that's what I watched my dad do, which was awesome. And so in high school and through college, I worked for my dad's consulting firm. So I got trained by him and got into the lifestyle and just loved it.
Yeah.
I didn't love his particular offering. I didn't love working with government agencies.
Dude, that would be difficult. Red tape.
It was really difficult. It's hard. It's like the opposite of playing Santa Claus when you have to knock on somebody's door and say, "Hey, eminent domain, and we're acquiring the property, and here's the process by which we'll take you through." Especially as a young,
You
know, I started doing that when I was 18 plus. So as a young face, really hard to show up on doorsteps and letting people know. But it was still a wonderful experience to work with my dad. I learned at the end of my college career that I didn't want to be there. I wanted to be in tech. I wanted to be in latest, greatest. And so what led me to CRO in the tech space was just had some really great friends and connections on the personal side of life and got into a couple of companies, not based off of talent, other than just total really great luck. So one of my early on jobs in my career, I was working for Cirrusy Dynex, which was a library software company down in Provo.
Okay.
And a buddy called me up and said, "Hey, I just left Omniture." He was in HR.
Yeah.
And said, "Hey, I'm going to this new startup. There's a handful of employees, but they need sales reps and they need implementation consultants. And I think you'd be awesome and you should come join us." So I did. And that little handful of folks in startup was a company called AtTask that became Workfront, that became Adobe.
Yeah.
And that was really the starting point or the jump off point for me of getting to go full cycle through all the revenue roles. I started as a consultant traveling and implementing the software, but I moved over to the revenue side of the house. And in those 8 years that I was with AtTask, Workfront was, you know, 2 million run rate to 110 million run rate. And
wow, dude.
Tons of growth. It was just a once in a lifetime for that kind of window of time in a career. It was just incredible.
Yeah. You got super black. Like, yeah, dude,
it was awesome.
Yeah. And that kind of catapulted you.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, I'll give Scott and Nate and the founders credit. They could have hired from without, but they really promoted from within a lot of times. And so in that period of time, there was, you know, 5 promotions for me and my family and more responsibility and more learning. And it was just an incredible ecosystem to take advantage of.
How does it translate, by the way, like a big company like that, like you got Workfront Adobe, right? And you're working at the top of revenue for Adobe.
Yeah.
Like my question is, Do the same things apply at the top of Adobe to a new startup at the bottom?
Yeah. So clarification, my journey ended before the Adobe acquisition.
Oh yeah. Okay. But like, but you know, what I'm saying. Right. Okay.
No, they're definitely different because the pay to play and the cogs that go and combat CAC and LTV are very different. Right.
Yeah.
And what we saw within the at task workfront time structure was you start to get to this size where you can start to roll downhill a little bit because of the renewal and cross sell upsell compounding that starts to happen on top of your net new, right? Net new growth is hard because there's always CAC. You always have the sales reps. You always have the marketing expense to land that first year revenue. But once they're in the house, if you can build a really beautiful array of additional products or additional revenue opportunities, then it compounds really fast. And so that's kind of the story of Workfront success is we really got a lot of wonderful, incredible logos where we would land in a department to manage projects and tasks. And then you could grow into another department and you could grow into another department. So that just the evolution of expansion sales, was a really beautiful model.
Yeah. That's a really good way to like, just start growing into a company. Just, you know, just the salesperson needs it. And I think that's why it's so important for young tech companies to have such a niche. And I hate that word, but you've got to do it. Right. Right. Like yes, everybody can use the software, but we're just going to go for tech companies, sales departments, specifically, right? AEs. Yeah,
right.
Like that's all we're going to go for. Cause if we can get it in there, then everybody will quickly, we can do use case stuff and then we can blow out there. But yeah, so I hear so many people, at least when I talk with founders or whatever, or early stage tech companies, they're like, oh yeah, our product's for everybody. It's like, okay, I know.
Right. Well, and it's really expensive to message to everybody.
Yeah, that is
tough. That's the beauty of a nuanced or a niched approach is your messaging gets to be really tight. So your analytics of how am I doing and how is it hitting is more clear.
Yeah, that's true. Oh yeah, that's a good point too. I've never thought about it that way, but it would be. Yeah, you can get really tight on your messaging. And it's just easy. Like people love the guy who just does one thing, right? Like I work specifically with clothing brands in the women's industry. Mm. That's where we succeed.
Right.
And then they kind of feel like that more that white glove, right? Like, oh yeah, okay. They do this all the time.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So Workfront was incredible experience.
That's awesome. And now you work with, well, go ahead, finish your story. Sorry.
Yeah. So that was my foray into tech sales and revenue. So selling the software, I became a strategic account manager. So renewing and upselling our largest accounts, ended up running that team and then ended up running all of renewal and expansion revenue globally for the company. And it was so much fun.
Yeah.
I left Workfront. We were very fortunate enough to have equity early. And so as part of the Series D, my wife and I were bought out and some of the small fish were cleared off the cap table as part of the Series D. It was awesome, awesome experience.
I was going to say, so life goes when you're raising money.
That's right. Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
I went and joined a company called Wealth Council that most people haven't heard of.
Okay.
Cool. Think TurboTax for estate planning attorneys. Very simple, very niche company.
Okay.
SMB play $400 or $500 a month to the attorney, and they would have software to create 300 plus legal docs that they would sell as the estate plans. And they own the market share, and it was a wonderful 3 or 4 years on the exec team. I ran everything point of sale and beyond. So again, existing renewal revenue and expansion sales, and it was great. That company was acquired in 2020. So that was a nice, I had been gone for almost 5 years. So
yeah, it
was
a little chunk.
Nice to get a little phone call. It was awesome.
Yeah.
And then when I wrapped up with Wealth Council is when I started my consultancy called Captain, which just try and focus on really $1 to $5 million run rate software companies, which here in Silicon Slopes, there's
a lot of them.
Yeah.
A ton of them.
I've tried to stay as much as possible on the bootstrap side. So, my monthly retainers validated because of revenues growing and profitability, but like today I've got a couple that are in the process of being venture backed. So that's also a fun and different process, but So, yeah.
I ask everybody in tech this, and I've gotten, I mean, majority of the same answer, but I always like getting different perspective. You go debt funding or equity funding?
Yeah.
Do you ever give
so all of the
advice on that?
Yeah. My feedback on how you finance your growth is so it's hyper nuanced.
Sure.
It just depends on where they're at, where are the revenues, what else they have access to. You know what I mean? Like venture back going straight for equity is beautiful if it's really going to be hyper growth. And it's literally buying gasoline to pour in the engine that's hyper, it's already validated and it's there.
Right. Yeah.
Then great. Then pre-purchase your growth. I think that makes a ton of sense. But if you're trying to stay closer to the profitability and actually kicking cash out of the business, but you want to buy growth as well, then the debt side looks good because you can pay for the amortization.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was going to say, I mean, equity sometimes makes sense. I think equity is such an interesting conversation because it's not about the money. I think when people go into an equity conversation only focused on the money, that's where they lose.
Yeah.
But if you go into an equity conversation and you're focused on like, what can the investor bring us besides money?
Yeah.
Like, would this person be good on the team if he didn't, you know, if I was just hiring them?
Right.
Per se, right? And I know that that is a loaded question because why would so-and-so ever come on here without, you know what I mean? But right. Like, you kind of got, and then they got to look at you, right? Like, and do you guys partner well and fit well? Because then the money, I think, is secondary. If that relationship falls, the money's just a anchor.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So, you know, back to the it depends answer, it also depends on where they're at in their revenue cycle, right? So when people raise capital early to build the product, that's a very different proposition than we have a product, we have product market fit or some glimpse of product market fit, and we're trying to accelerate. Those are just such different chapters. And so do we go equity? Do we go debt? It just usually debt doesn't show up until product market fit and some revenue
that's
balance fair. That allows us to take payments.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with that. I just prefer like my accounting mind always prefers debt because equity just ends up being so.
Yeah,
but it's sometimes you can't take debt. Sometimes you gotta
go
for equity.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And a really fun and a fun conversation. I know I nerd out about it. Like I love sales, but I ended up, getting an accounting and finance degrees. And like, so I kind of nerd out about the money because not a lot of business owners think about that. Right. Like,
yeah,
it's just like, oh, if we build it, they'll come and, or, you know, it's going to be cool if we raise $2 million or whatever. And it's like,
Right. Well, and I think it's, I love your question because it helps. I can clarify why I've had, 5-6 years of getting to do what I love.
Yeah.
It sits kind of in the construct of where companies are in this question, right?
Yeah.
So the reason that I get to work with companies is typically they're on the, we've got some product market fit and we're now in this conundrum of we know where we want to get from our next revenue goals, but we're unsure if that's through a capital raise, whether that's debt or equity, or is this about, there's just some things here that we don't know what to do from an optimization perspective. Like, can we really people, process, technology, really streamline what we're doing to get to the next step of growth. But because this is our first foray, or maybe we're not on the sales expertise side of the skill set, like we're just lacking, like, what do we do next?
Yeah.
And in that problem is where I get to spend a lot of my time.
Yeah.
Which is they don't want to afford a, $300,000 executive to help them come in CRO.
Yeah.
The sales team. It's just not to that maturity yet.
Right.
But they need the experience and the been there, done that swagger to help them look through what's going on in the revenue house and to make those right changes and pivots to be able to test and upgrade optimization.
Yeah.
And that is where fractional consulting or fractional leadership has proved really, really well for both sides, for how I get to spend my time.
Oh, yeah.
And for them, because they don't have to commit $300,000 to $400,000 in a full-time
real FTE, CEO. Yeah.
FTE. But yeah, I can show up a couple days a week and I can come into the office
and
we can get into really looking at the engine, popping the hood and trying to take, a traditional vehicle and how do we make it a race car?
Yeah.
And do we have all the tools available to do that? Or do we need capital to get us the race engine that we need.
Yeah, like you need that. That's why I like consultants, man. Those can make a difference. I've never been a fan of like the coaching world, but I think consulting is so much different when you're talking about like doing something, because there's real deliverables and there's metrics that you can define a consultant by.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I feel tremendously blessed and privileged. I love working with all the clients that I have over the years. And I think for me, the biggest fruit, obviously working with the teams and helping them develop those performance engines and seeing the fruits come, that's a tremendous validation. For me, it's about people and relationships.
Yeah.
And so getting to work as closely as I do with founders and CEOs, that intimate relationship where there's 11 PM texts and, you know, they're on a trip to do whatever and they're calling me at who knows what time just because they want to continue to discuss the strategy, and you're that trusted advisor and extended part of the exec team. That's good stuff.
It's just cool fun
to, you know what I mean? That for me personally, it's been wildly validating.
And I like it. Yeah. I like that. How do you pick clients?
How do I pick them? It's very organic.
I mean, I'm sure you don't take everybody that comes through the door.
No. Well,
or maybe you do.
And I don't market, right? So for me, it's very boutique. I've been privileged with having a few exits. And so for my personal lifestyle, I have four kids between 17 and 8. And so I get to choose, as I did with my dad growing up, watching him. You know, I'm leaning more into family life in the last kind of 3 or 4 years. But I still spend 4 days a week, typically with a client somewhere in the day.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's more about keeping that balance of, I love keeping in the craft. I love keeping sharp. I love making sure I have billables at a certain amount because I'm still a salesperson. You know, I still have my own personal quotas. Yeah. But it's been very organic, right? So when you get to, and you see the success with a company and that founder CEO trusts you, and they're very much in the circle of other founders and startups.
Yeah.
And when they hear the pain of, man, we're kind of here and we're kind of plateauing or we're stuck. Yeah. It just becomes natural word of mouth of, oh my gosh, Dustin came, he spent time with us. And so that's really been the story of the last kind of 4 or 5 years is I'll get a phone call of so-and-so recommended you. And it's been a beautiful process.
Dude, that's awesome. I love that. And, you know, you're still a salesperson. So if you met somebody at an event and it was super busy and this was Gary V style, you only got like 2 minutes and they asked you, what like is the most important sales skill or thing that you can do to improve your sales? Like, what is that? What would you say?
As a salesperson?
Yeah. If I'm a salesperson and I want to get, or I'm a business owner trying to sell or whatever, like what's like, if you could give one thing, what would that be?
Can I give I gotta have two because it balances each other.
All right, deal.
One, you have to genuinely love yourself.
Okay.
And two, you have to genuinely love your product.
All right.
And the reason why it has to be both is the first one is that precursor of self-care.
Yeah.
Because the most effective high performance people know how to stay centered. They know how to stay cool and collected. And that has to do with how they're balanced and safe with themselves in all aspects of their life.
Ooh, yeah. I like that.
Right?
Yeah.
And so when I can show up for me and be happy and safe and centered, then I can bring my best when it comes to me talking to other people.
Yeah.
And if I can bring my best self through something I love and am passionate about, that's a salesperson.
Yeah, that's amazing. A great way to put that too, because if you're not, if you're not, if family life isn't on point, if mental health isn't on point, you really can't show up for other people.
That's right. So the framework that I try and bring to my clients when they say, okay, great, you're going to pop the hood. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. For me, that means people, process, technology. Those are the levers that we look at. But when we start with people for this exact reason, it's not like I want to get into all the drama of their lives, but I want to understand where they're already disconnecting from themselves being high performers.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and that's the hard part with, that's why I have, and that's a great way to put this, because that's why I have such a hard time with like commission only positions is because it's really like commission only positions are really hard on mental health typically.
Yeah.
And you start and like your nature is to flow where you can find comfort, and pay plans dictate behavior. And,
right.
And, yeah, that's a good one. I mean, commission only sales works in certain cases, but you know, tech, I don't think is one of them. Maybe you disagree. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. Comp plans, we could probably spend a week on.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, you're exactly right. The risk reward protocol of a comp plan will affect each person differently.
Yeah.
But it's also really great checks and balances, because oftentimes we get individuals who raise their hand and say, yeah, I'm so excited to be in sales. And that proves out usually in short order.
Yeah.
It's not really, it's not really for them. It's not really the right person or the right seat on the bus.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about how to hire a salesperson, how to screen if someone's going to be good or not. Like, I have my thoughts. I mean, obviously the first thing is like, the when I look at hiring salespeople is like, I check my ego out the door, because I'm not like, everybody wants to think they're so good at picking people.
Yeah.
And you can't, like,
right.
Like I actually just over the weekend had a huge L with someone who I thought was amazing.
Yep.
And turned out to be like, not right. Yeah. And win some, you lose some, man, you can't be right every time. So how do you pick salespeople? What process do you go through hiring them?
Yeah. So this is where mentorship and having amazing mentors gets to help answer some of these questions for us that are a little bit later in our career. Mm-hmm. I've had phenomenal and still have, I feel completely blessed to have some really great mentors in my life. Mm-hmm. One of mine from the Workfront days that really gave me this framework for hiring phenomenal sales talent, was my boss. His name's Frank Mailet, right?
So okay.
Wildly successful Silicon Slopes exec. He's been, you know, he was head of global sales for Workfront. He's CRO for Instructure.
Oh, cool.
He's had
big guy,
helped four or five companies scale and exit. I mean, just wildly successful with really large sales teams. And his framework for how to do this is so simple and really adopted almost a decade ago. So my answer to you is really Frank's answer. So I'll give him credit. But it comes down to the three I's. So how do I find the best salespeople? And there's a construct of how you can interview for it. That's probably a separate discussion. But for him, he needs three things, and he can then take that kind of an individual and help them be successful. Mm. The three I's of a sales rep are integrity, intensity, and innovation. So the integrity part is kind of what we were just talking about, is how are they as the person? Mm-hmm. Like, do they really command and are they in control of the personal side of their life?
Yeah.
Do they know how to manage the stress, and do they know how to really control their destiny?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the integrity part. And of course the natural definition they hold themselves to honesty and doing things the right way. And being above board and not over promising and setting up the company to under deliver and all of those things. So that's the integrity. Intensity is work ethic. Sales is hard.
Yeah.
And sales is typically a lot of big numbers. The more calls I make, the more emails I send, the more discussions I have, it's funnel management 101, right? So if I want more closed won business, then I need more velocity through my funnel. And if I want more velocity through my funnel, I have to be intense with every minute I have access to in my sellable month or quarter. That's intense.
Yeah.
But that's intensity. And then the third is innovation, meaning stop pushing the boulder uphill. Like, if you're going to bring that kind of intensity day after day, you're going to run into, this makes zero sense. Why do we do this?
Right.
Why do I have to log, you know, how I use my technologies, and like, why don't we have an integration from our platform back to the CRM that would inform me better on how to do this, right? Yeah. So those type of people raise their hand quickly and often to bring to the forefront the inefficiencies that would be leading, if removed, would lead to greater revenues.
Well, yeah, that's funny. That last one reminds me of one thing I did when I joined a tech company. One time we hit this new tech company. I was an AE too. And dude, the Salesforce was a mess, man. Nobody really knew what territories were, anything like that. So I went to my manager and I was like, what do you want me to do? He, you know, call these people. I'm like, all right, cool. So I like got on Upwork and I was like, I need a list of 1500 people, like this specific. And And I just started dialing, and everybody was like, dude, why aren't you building a list, or who are you calling? And I remember I told my manager, I was like, I don't know. You just told me to call it. I paid some guy $300 on Upwork to do it for me, you know, but it. Stuff like that. Right. Like, right. And he was super impressed. He was like, you can do that. Like, he didn't even know. I was like, yeah, dog, we actually don't need a bunch of stuff we think we need. Like, we can just do this kind of, you know, this way. And it was pretty fun. Yeah. And I did get a few head turns, cause a lot of people thought I was cheating, but I was like, I don't, what do you mean, man? You could do the same thing.
Cheating. It's being resourceful.
I was like, you want an Upwork account?
Right. Well, and that's the beauty of the three I's is.
Yeah, that is cool. I really like that.
If you're being innovative, but you're dropping integrity, then you're cheating.
Sure.
Right. You're trying to cheat the system. But if you're being innovative and holding your integrity in place, now you're being resourceful.
Right. Yeah.
Now you're being what a leader would want everybody to do, because if it works for you, it's going to work for all of my sales floor,
right,
which is really going to have a compounding effect.
Yeah. Well, and then at that point, if you want to duplicate, cause like that would be pretty gnarly price wise to duplicate buying lists for that many salespeople.
Right.
But you know, there's other ways to do it that you could, and you know, that innovation, right? Like now how does a sales leader figure out how to scale this little process? Sure. Right. Like, I like those definitions though. Because it is true. I always look for like the people. I always look for like a culture fit first, which is that integrity piece. Because I think if you have integrity, yes, I like that. Because I think the other way I learned it, when I learned it from Patrick Lencioni, his book, The Ideal Team Player, which was Humble, Hungry, and Smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, which basically is this, you know, is just the three H's versus the three I's.
Right.
But I like that a lot. And so, when you go to companies, then like tech companies, and they're hiring salespeople, how do you deal with those? How do you deal with all those egos? And maybe this is just a general question of like, how do you deal with all the egos in SaaS, man?
Yeah. So,
man. Cause look, we've all been there. Like, yeah, I need help. Come help me. Tony Robbins said I need a mentor, right? And then you get in there and you start fixing them, and they're like, whoa. You're like, this was for LinkedIn only. Like, I actually don't need your help, you know, or whatever. I don't know if you've ever had that, but I've had that personally, or like, I've also just seen that in the background, but.
Yeah. I think, you know, I'm big. One of my core personal values is back to the integrity part.
Yeah.
There's so much, especially in sales, but in life in general,
yeah,
maybe even more so in sales worlds, is the concept of puffery or peacocking.
Yeah. Great work. Great
and,
word.
And there's a time and place, maybe minimally, for that. But what I've really learned over the last kind of 15, 20 years of getting to play this game at a pretty great level, man, just staying centered to truth. So if somebody reaches out, and I get this, Dustin, I would love to take you to lunch. I would love to pick your brain. My response is either, yes, I would like to do that, and or no, I'm sorry, I don't have time, or I do, but it's going to be a month or so out. Mm-hmm. It's okay to not have to do all the, oh man, yeah, I would love to meet with you. I'd love to do all these things.
Yeah.
And then to not ever give them the opportunity to, and you never show up.
Yeah.
It's an absolute waste of time. And I don't feel like that gets any party any type of benefit.
Right.
So I love to mentor, and I love being mentored. That's truth. Yeah. So, okay, great. So I'm a karma guy. So of course I want to spend as much time as I can with people who are, that's pretty awesome. It's pretty vulnerable. They don't know me, and I know it's easy because of LinkedIn, but I still respect that they've taken time to say, I would love to spend time with you.
Yeah.
Wow. Awesome. I really would love to meet this person, hear their story, understand what they're trying to do. And if there is something I can impart from my experience and journey, then awesome.
Yeah.
That's human connection 101. That's why, you know, that's why we're here.
Right.
You know, mortality is because there's lots of other human beings, and hopefully we can benefit each other.
Yeah.
But if I can't, it still should be dealt with kindness. You know what? I apologize. It's going to be really difficult. Is there a specific question or a specific scenario that you're wanting guidance on? Maybe I can leave it on the texting communication side, still convey value or share, impart some kind of, value to them. Then awesome.
Yeah.
But you're right. We think it's this type of positioning and peacocking game. And it's just, it doesn't last. It doesn't actually bring any dividend. It's just a big waste of time.
Well, and when you're playing it, like, such a high level in sales, and you're dealing with a lot of A players, I feel like there's not a lot of, everybody can see through it. So I don't think there's a lot of ego at the very, very top, because we all know, don't worry, man. Like, you don't have to play games with me. Let's just talk. Right. We can all, I feel like there's more of that than there is of the ego. Although at the top, there certainly can be.
That's
ego,
right.
But
well, and it's kind of comes back to a simple sales skill or at the end of the day, when you're cold calling a whole bunch of people, you know that 95, 97% aren't going to be yes and progress.
Right.
So what's the controllable in that situation? The controllable is I get to control the narrative of how I hopefully make them feel about my name or brand.
Yeah, yeah.
So that plays true with how I interact with other people in the sales industry and how I navigate the egos. I have one goal in my human interactions is that whether it's a day from now, a week, or 100 years with anybody that I've ever come across, they'd be like, do you know Dustin? And if they do, the response is they feel some emotion that feels like positivity or happiness or joy or smiling or kindness.
I like that.
That the legacy of who I am is not about deals won and it's not about companies grown or equity sold. It's that I was consistently adding goodness while I did those things.
Yeah. I like that. Very stoic approach.
Yeah,
very stoic approach. I really like that. I was going to say, this kind of reminds me of like, I love jujitsu and wrestling. Mm. And, you know, when you get a black belt in jujitsu, this is probably the easiest example because wrestling doesn't really have like belts or anything. But like when you go when you meet a black belt in jujitsu, they are not mean. No one's a bully. Like you don't, it's pretty rare to find a black belt in jujitsu who's a bully. Mm. Although, like I said, we're all human. I'm sure there's a couple, but it's pretty rare. And it's because of the journey that you had to go through to get that,
right?
That like kind of softens you. And so one of the things that I do for my kids is like, and I coach wrestling and stuff. I think everybody should go to wrestling or jiu-jitsu or some kind of combat sport because it prevents bullying. Mm. I think that's what we're missing actually. And I've had a few conversations, but because go meet a black belt. He'll teach you. He's not going to be a douche. He's going to help you. He's going to add more
right.
to you. And I feel like that's the same way with really high value salespeople. It's like most of the time they're not jerks.
That's it.
They're very giving. They're very helpful because they know they've been through the process. So whenever I see somebody who is like, who claims to be a highly successful salesperson and they're a dick, I know that they're probably not a highly successful salesperson.
Yeah. Well, in you see that play out in scale. Like, so really great sales reps hold those characteristics or those values. They execute through them. But really great leaders who have responsibility of many reps are quick to eliminate the toxicity.
Oh, for sure.
And defending the goodness that comes and the momentum and morale that compounds when it stays present.
Yeah.
Because it only takes a rep or two
of
dropping responsibility and not acting through the value set to tell everybody else it's actually not important to us.
Oh, totally. I'd rather have 3 B+ reps who are no brain damage and good people, right? That integrity piece, than 1 rep who outsells them all, but is a total like downer on the team is just a, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I've gotten pushback on that a couple of times, but I don't care. I don't care if it costs me more money. Yep. I don't care if it costs me more time to train people. Doesn't matter to me. I don't want that. Those guys on my team.
Yeah.
No place. So I like that. Yeah. Well, Dustin, you've been great, man. You've shared a lot of really awesome insight. I won't take any more of your time. You've been gracious with it. So I appreciate it. But where can people follow you and find you? Get more info about you.
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn from a business perspective. Yeah. Reach out. I'd love to talk to anybody. And if I don't have time, then we'll keep it as a texting narrative. But yeah, Dustin@captain.co is my company. So if you've got a small startup in the $1 to $5-7 million range and you're looking for some fractional help and assistance, I'd be thrilled to have a conversation.
Dope, man. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, doll.